Be'ez Hashem Yisbarach, we begin Parak Tisha Asa, the 19th parak in Hilchas Ishah, the laws of marriage in the Rambam, Sefer Nashim, which the Rambam continues in the theme of the previous parakim regarding the rights of the woman in her ksuba and the tenoi ksuba, the stipulations, the conditions in the ksuba, like her getting sustenance and other things. And now we move on to the tenaim of the ksuba as it relates to the yisraimim regarding her children, regarding the orphans. Some of these the Rambam is going to discuss in this parak is the concept of what's called ksubas benin dichrin, which is one of the stipulations, one of the tenoi ksuba of that the male children of the woman inherit her ksuba, the rights of the banos that the daughters have in nechsei avin in their father's properties, also not to be not to uproot the tenai ksuba, the stipulation of the ksuba, and the relationship of the daughter of a me'enis, which is a woman who was a minor married and she removes herself from the marriage that way, or the daughter of a yavama, or the daughter of an arusa of a woman that was engaged, or the daughter of a shniya that's rabbinically prohibited to be married regarding mezainis, regarding getting fed, and regarding the laws of banim and banis, the sons and daughters, as they apply to who has what rights regarding mezainis, regarding fed from the estate after the father passed away. So begin halacha aleph, starting off with the inheritance of the male sons. Halacha aleph, metnai haksuba, from the conditions of the ksuba, is shiyuha banim hazacharim, that the male sons should be yershni ksubas iman, that they inherit their mother's ksuba, which is the primary and the addition that the father writes for them, who he gives it when he gets married as a gift to his wife. They inherit that. Una dunyasa, and also her dowry, meaning that that she brought into the marriage, which were called the iron sheep assets, which on some level, the nixim look she always had, but term basel on some level, like she's giving it to him, because he takes responsibility and he assures it. And then she died when their father was still alive, so the father really inherited it, like any husband inherits his wife, and then the father passed away. That's what we're saying, that here, the halacha is that first, her male children inherit that kesuba and that nedunya. Then they split the rest of the inheritance from their father's estate with their brothers equally. And this was known as kesubas benin dichrin, the kesuba of the male sons. Halacha basis, Rambam Ketz at house. So Rambam illustrates this. He says, Nasi Isha. He says, a man marries a woman. Ksubasa unidnyasa elef, her ksuba, which is the amount that he's bringing in to give her. Dunyasa is what she's bringing in. But be that as it may, they're all included in that ksuba. So altogether, it's elef as 1,000. Let's say he wrote for her, the primary was 200, he added on the two samples of 300, and then she brought in nixit term basel, 500. But be that as it may, that whole total is 1,000. The older ben, and they have a child, they have a son. Now, the wife dies in the lifetime of her husband, so her husband inherits her nedunya, what she brought into the marriage. Additionally, the ksuba was never collected. Then he goes and he marries another woman, which is not specifically, it doesn't have to be necessarily like that, but that's just Rambam's illustrating as an example. He marries another woman. Her ksuba and her nedunya, their total is only 200. The older ben, and they have a son, and that wife also dies in her husband's lifetime. The Achach Mesu, now after his two wives died, now the husband died, and in his estate he leaves over 2,000. So, Benoimin Rishaina, Yerish, Elef Shabak Subasim, like we explained, so the son of the first wife, he inherits the 1,000 of his mother's Ksuba, Benoimin Ashnia, and the son from the second wife, Yerish Masim Shabak Subasim, he inherits the 200 from his mother. Vashar, and the rest, as we say in Halacha Aleph, Yerushim, Ma'aseh B'Shavah, they equally divide. So Nimtza comes out, B'yad Ben Rishayna, in the hands of the first son, is Elef V'Arba Me'ez, if 1,400, we're 1,000 from his mother's ksuba, and 400 from the inheritance. V'yad Ben Hashniya, Shesh Me'ez, in the hand of the second one, is 600, because he's getting the 200 from his mother, and the 400, which he's equally dividing, the remaining 800, which that first son gets 400, and he gets 400, which he gets a total of 200. Now, the reason for the ksubas benin dichrin is because that we want people to give monies to their daughters when they get married, because if the father of the girl knows that his grandchildren, specifically his wife's son, not some other wife's son, is going to get that, so he's going to give more when they get married. So therefore, they instituted that additionally, that the primary ksuba, the ikra and the tesefes, that also her sons inherited, not just what the grandfather, her father gave, but even what the husband's giving, so that the father shouldn't say, wait a second, the chassan, he doesn't care that my grandchildren have, I'm also not going to give, and therefore it's going to prevent the in-laws from giving, which we want them to give, and therefore the grandson, the wife's son, inherits this. That's one of the tanaik suba. Halacha Gimel says the Rambam, remember, when do we say this? Is b'sheniach yosa al kadesh teik subais. Is only if there's more left over after the collection of, let's say, when there's two wives and there's the sons, there's more left over than these two ksubas, dinner echad yosa, at least one dinner or more. So that there should be a leftover that could be equally divided, as is the laws of inheritance. But if there's nothing left over that of a dinner, then they don't get their mother's ksuba, they equally divide it, as is the regular Yerusha. As Rama explains, if you're going to do it in the Takana Drabon in a way that each one's going to get the mother's ksuba, you're not going to have one dinner left to divide it amongst inheritors. It comes to this stipulation of the ksuba, which is only rabbinic, it's going to nullify the inheritance between the sons in an equal manner, which is biblical. So the rabbis did not institute their takana to nullify the biblical Yerusha. It's only if there's going to be something left over that then each son inherits his mother's ksuba. Halacha Dalet. V'adin l'mishu nasa nashim, rabbi says, rabbi, so too, it's not only just with two wives, if a man married many wives, b'mizvachazu, whether it's in succession, one after another, or b'mivasachaz, whether at the same time, simultaneous, u'mesu kul machai, but they all die when he's alive. V'loy mehen b'adin z'charim, and he has from them many sons. Imha yisham yisa g'day kol k'subas din, if you have at least from leftover, after all the mother's k'subas are given to their children, there's still at least leftover a dinner, then every single one inherits their mother's ksuba, and then the rest divide equally, but again, there has to be at least a dinner left over. Now, halacha hey, let's say there wasn't a dinner left over, but amar hayisim, the orphans of the woman who had the larger ksuba, who they obviously want to get their mother's ksuba, then they get much more than just dividing equally. So they say, you know what? We will give to the state, we'll add on a dinner, so that there's going to be some leftover, so that they can take the mother's ksuba. That's a good idea. It's worth it to spend a few dinars so that we can just up the amount that there'll be some leftovers that we can get this huge windfall of our mother's ksuba. So the Rama in Shaman, we don't listen to them. Rather, we evaluate the estate in court. How much was it worth at the time that the father passed away? And even if the estate increased or diminished after the father passed away, before they came to divide it, in Shemalaisim al Kashas Mizavin, we evaluate exactly how much it was worth at the moment the father passed away. That's the moment of truth. And if there's leftover, then they divide equally. If not, then they get the mother's ksuba. And if not, there's no leftover, then you do with the biblical Yerusha, everyone getting an equal amount. Now, halacha vav, further qualifying this, that you have to have a leftover for dinner. Okay, let's say there was, after all the mother's ksubas would be divided amongst their sons, there would be a dinner or more left over. Now, so says the Rama, even if there's, what do you mean, there's an outstanding debt that the father owes that will cancel out that leftover dinner or more, says the Rama, that's not going to diminish from that fact because, as the Mefarshim explained, there's no greater inheritance, quote unquote, than that. Meaning, when the father dies and the estate falls in front of the inheritors and there's an outstanding debt against the father, they're doing a mitzvah to pay up their father's debt. That is their inheritance. So it's not like it's not there. It's there. They're just paying up a debt. In that case, even though once they get their mother's ksuba, there's not really going to be left any money to use because they're going to have to use it to pay up the debt. It doesn't make a difference that the estate still had that, and therefore it is considered as a biblical Yerusha, and therefore they could get their mother's ksuba. Now, halacha zayin, further on this idea, so it was married to two women. And one of them died when the father was still alive. But the other one died after the father already passed away, but she didn't get a chance to collect her ksuba until she herself died. And this man had sons from both of these wives. So here says the Rama also an exception to the rule. Even though there's nothing left over more than these two ksubas, let's say left over 1,000, and this one's 600, this one's 400. There's not going to be anything left over. It doesn't make a difference. If the second wife, if she died after the husband died, if she swore the oath of the widow, which is that, yeah, the husband didn't leave her over anything, and she didn't sell him the ksuba, meaning she has a right to collect the ksuba. And she made that oath before she passed away. But now, so her children, they first inherit her ksuba. The reason for that is, when they get the mother ksuba, they're not getting it because of the stipulation of ksuba's bin din dichrin, that requires this extra din being left over. That's not why they're getting it. El Yerusha Shel Torah. They're inheriting biblically from their mother. The mother already made the oath. It's already hers. She doesn't get a chance to actually do the actual collection. But it's already hers. And biblically, they inherit from their mother. So that has nothing to do with a meiser dinner. V'achach Yerushim b'nei Rishonim k'subas imam b'nei zeh. Then, subsequently, the sons of the first wife, they inherit their mother's k'suba only because of the t'nai k'suba of k'subas b'nei Nichrin, because their mother died when the father was still alive. So that's only, they don't biblically, the mother never had it then. It's only if the husband divorced or he died. But here the mother died first. It's only t'nai k'suba that when the husband dies, they'll get their mother's k'suba, even though she died when he was still alive. Now, there's no meisa din over here on the two k'subas as we explain. So here also, the k'suba that's being paid to the sons of the second wife is considered as the meisa dinner. Because since that's being collected as a debt, there's no greater inheritance than this, than the children who have to pay up their father's debt. And if that's quote-unquote the Yerusha that they're then dividing, which they're both using to pay up as a mitzvah, the second wife, because the second wife is not k'subas b'nichrin, that's the collection of the k'suba, which is a chayv. And therefore that would go into the calculation of the inheritance. Now, but the neshasham klum, but let's say there's nothing left over, then chalk ma'isa b'shava, then again, they can't take their mother's k'suba if there's nothing left, because they can't take away from the other sons, and therefore then you would divide it equally. Now, this all if the second wife died after she made the oath. And then again, the second children are biblically inheriting their mother as nothing to do with the father's Yerusha, it's their mother's Yerusha. Mother already got it from the husband's estate. But the Mesa couldn't shut the shovel. Let's say she died before she got a chance to take the oath. Oh, now the children don't inherit an oath, and they didn't inherit anything because she didn't make an oath yet, so it's not hers. Then b'nei rishonim yerushim k'subas imam b'vad. So in this case, actually, only the sons of the first wife, they inherit their mother's k'suba based on k'subas b'nei Nichrin, and the second ones don't have b'nei Nichrin because the mother died after the father. But neither could they inherit the mother because the mother didn't make the oath. So b'shar chalk b'shava, the second son don't get their mother's k'suba, and the rest they divide evenly. Halacha ches. Let's say a man was married to two women. He had sons from them, umeis, and he passed away. Now, both of them have a right to collect their k'suba from the inheritors of the husband. But then the wives died after the husband died. Now, in this, so in this case, if they both swore, but before they got a chance to collect, they died. So in this case, both sons, from both wives, they biblically inherit that mother's k'suba, because it went from the husband to the wife the moment she took the oath, and now it's a direct inheritance from their mother. It's nothing to do with the husband, with the father. And therefore, it's not coming with the stipulation, it's not coming from the t'nai of k'subas b'nei Nichrin. The fikach, therefore, imashkichin im yesha. So we're not going to pay attention if there's going to be leftovers or not, because it's nothing to do with that. It's inheritance of their mothers. Now, however, just the inheritance of the first wife get it before that of the second wife, because her obligation was first because she had the prior marriage with the prior k'suba, so her debt was like a first bal chayv. But that was only if they took the oath. But if they didn't swear, so cholkin habanim hakol b'shava. So then, the sons all divide equally. Ve'en shem yerushas k'suba, and there's no inheritance of k'suba. Lefi she'en la'amon k'suba atshut t'shav, because the widow only has a right to her k'suba until she takes an oath. And she didn't take the oath, so she doesn't have any rights. And now regarding k'subas b'nei Nichrin, they also don't get it, because the wives didn't die when the husband was alive. So therefore, they died after the husband. So therefore, there's no halach k'subas b'nei Nichrin, that k'subas b'nei Nichrin is only when they die first, and then the husband. But here, they died afterwards, but then they're supposed to get it themselves. Yeah, but they didn't take the oath, and they died. So in this case, they just do a regular Yerusha. Halacha tes. Achas nishba v'achas la nishba. Let's say one did get a chance to take the oath. They both died after the husband died. One swore and one didn't swear and they died. So zush nishba, so the one that took the oath, but now yoshim k'suba satchila. So the ones from that woman, they inherit a k'suba first, like any creditor who gets it first before the inheritance of the sons. And then v'shachal k'nesu b'shav, and then they can split everything equally. Because the other ones don't get anything because their mother didn't swear. Now, whoever inherits the k'suba of his mother, who died when his father was still alive, which is this idea of k'subas ben nechon that we're calling one of the tonight k'suba, in a term from the chasm shabadim, cannot collect from encumbered properties, because this k'suba does not have a locha as a general chayv, which collects from the chasm shabadim. Rather, it has the halachic status as Yerusha, because that's what he writes in the k'suba, that your sons from you are going to inherit more than their sons b'Yerusha, so it's qualified as Yerusha, and Yerusha cannot collect from the Chaz Meshabadim. And the Chayrin rather collect only from available properties from the estate, Kakol Yerushim, like all inheritors, and therefore it's limited to that. So the properties that were sold when the father was still alive to other people, that's called the Chaz Meshabadim, that cannot be collected from with this Ksubis Ben Nindechim. Now, and Halacha Yud Rambam moves on to this idea of the orphans, specifically regarding the daughters, regarding them getting fed and their dwelling from the father's estate. Says Rambam, Umetznai Ksuba, and another one of the stipulations of the Ksuba, we're going through the, we said there's 10 rights that the woman gets, 3 are biblical, some are rabbinic, and this is from the Tanayim of that are added on to the Ksuba, that the daughters get fed from the father's estate after he passes away, which is interestingly that although actually when he's still alive, the halacha actually is that he's not obligated to feed them only until 6 years old. But one of the Tanai Ksuba is when he passes away, he is obligated to feed the daughters, also either until they get engaged, or Yachay Ivriguru, until they become a begaris, which is approximately like 12 and a half. Now, Baga Ba'as, if she becomes an adult, which is 6 months after she becomes a real adult, which is Naira, 6 months later is Begeris, even though she's not engaged. Oh, or the other way around. She got engaged even though she's not a Begeris, in the Mezainis, then she stops getting Mezainis from this state. And the daughter that gets fed from the father's state after he passed away, her handiwork, meaning the income that she herself makes and what her finds go to herself, not the brothers, because the brothers have no rights. The father cannot bequeath his daughter's rights and her ma'isidayim, and also regarding her matziah, which is because of Eva, you don't have that with the sons because they have to do it anyway. So that she gets to keep. So in contrast to, let's say, a regular wife that has to give that in what she gets back, the daughter doesn't have to give that to the brothers. Now, halacha yiralf, place in labas, we designate for the daughter mezayin this food, chsus, and clothing, and mother, and the dwelling place, an apartment, minich sevir from her father's estate, like we designate for the widow. And we also sell the properties to be able to feed for the grocery bill for the daughter and her clothing, without making any announcements. Just like we said previously regarding the selling for the food and the clothing of the widow, which we can't waste time when they need food to the grocery to go do these announcements. Now, Ella, but there is one difference between the widow and the daughter. The woman, we designate her the amount according to her status or the status of her husband, whichever one's greater. But regarding the daughter, nothing to do with status. We just do whatever is necessary, and that's all we give. And the in abundance boys. Another difference is, here in contrast to the widow, is that the daughter doesn't have to swear. Because by the widow, we have to swear because maybe the husband gave her, and what she's going collecting if she already got. Daughters, we're not concerned that he would give it to a minor, he wouldn't give it, and therefore, she doesn't have to swear. Halachid base. In abundance yershin ksubas iman, the sons do not inherit their mother's ksuba, which is what we mentioned in the previous halachas, what's called ksubas ben nichren, and this one that we just mentioned now, and neither does the daughters get fed, which we just mentioned that from the father's estate after he dies, with all these stipulations, only if they have, they're producing the document that they have to show the mother's ksuba, which including that are these tanaik ksuba. But if you don't have the document of the ksuba, they don't have anything. Maybe the mother waived her rights of her ksuba, and the halach is whenever you moichel the ksuba, you lose all the tanaik ksuba, as the Rambam says in halach in Perikid Zayin. Now the Rambam wonders, he says, wait a second, why would the food of the daughter be dependent on the payment of the ksuba, but mechila is like paying up, as if it was paid. Now, if you pay up the ksuba of the woman that he divorces, you think the daughters are not going to take food? Why would one be dependent on the other? But the Rambam obviously held that no, you have to be concerned that maybe she was meichel ksuba and she explicitly that she's being meichel on the mazon of the banis. But you're right, by parayin, there's no mechila. Here, when you're doing mechila would seem to include everything, which even that of the mazon of the banis. Now, but this is only if they write ksubas. The mindarkam lichtam ksuba, but as the Rambam had mentioned previously a few times, that if it's a custom in those places that they don't write a ksuba, yeshul mikfiatnam, then they automatically have those stipulations because they don't have to produce a ksuba, they don't write ksubas in those places. Halacha Yud Gimel. Misha Tziva B'Shas Misasa. Now, if someone commanded at the time that he was dying, La'akar Echad Mitnai Ksuba, to uproot one of the conditions of the Ksuba. Let's say he says, I don't want that the daughter should get fed from this state. He doesn't want his widow to get fed from this state. Even though he says, no, I don't want the sons to inherit their mother's Ksubas. So Halacha is, Ain't Shemilei, we don't listen to him because he's Meshuvit, because of the stipulations of the Bezdin from the moment he got married to her. Now, let's say Nasir Kav Chasa B'Matan Lachem. Let's say he gave all his whole estate as a good buddy. He gifted everything to his friend, leaving his family out in the cold. So, says the Rambam, Hoylam Atna Shechiv Merah. So, since, yes, this is what's called the gift of the dying person. And that works just automatically as is. But in the Koine El Lachamisa, but the acquisition only happens after he dies. Kamesh Zbar, like we can explain in Hilchiz Zechiyah Be'ez Hashem Yizbarach. So, Harim Matan, so it comes out that gift and the Chiv and the Chasim and the obligations of his estate with all these stipulations that he has in the courts to feed the sons and the daughters and the widow and all that. Boin kachat, they're really happening at the same time because the obligations both start the moment he dies. Therefore, I'm a nasar ben aisav nizayin from the chasav. So his widow and his daughters will be fed from the estate. Uvanam yoshim ksubas iman shemesim b'chayi bala, and his sons will inherit the mother ksuba that died when he was still alive, because one cannot push away the other one because they're both happening at the same time. Moreover, the Rambam himself in Hilchos Chiya actually makes it sound like that really the obligations that the husband has to the ksuba and to the mezayin actually was before the gift that he gave. Now, although they're both taking effect at the same time, but it's even stronger, and therefore these obligations will not be pushed away because of the matnas chibura, and therefore he'll still have to fulfill those obligations. And besides that gift that he's given to that other person, halach yadal bas hamama enes, the daughter of a woman that did mian, meaning if someone marries a minor orphan, and she could refuse that marriage up until she becomes an adult, what's called mion. She doesn't need a get. She could just leave the union. Now, if she was impregnated, and she did mion to her husband, and then she gave birth to a daughter, so the daughter of a mena'enis, Hariyah Kesharban, this is like all other daughters, v'yesht mazainis, and she gets sustenance from the state after her father passed away. Now, although, as the Mefarshim find difficult, the mena'enis doesn't have a ksuba, as the Rambam himself says later on, Perichav Dalid. So, if you don't have a ksuba, then you don't have tonight ksuba either. So, how could the daughter even get fed? So, what you could say is that's not true, because the me'enis actually does get a ksuba when she gets engaged with all the tonight ksuba. It's just that afterwards she causes herself to get a loss by doing mi'un, so she loses her ksuba. But her daughter does not lose her rights, and therefore, the woman, her, she's losing her ksuba, but the daughter's not going to lose her rights from mezainis when her mother does mi'un. Now, according to the Ravid, actually, this whole halacha doesn't even start, because he says a minor that's doing miun cannot give birth yet because she's a minor. So how could she have a daughter? The Rambam holds this, no, actually a minor actually could become pregnant and do miun and then subsequently give birth to a viable child, and therefore that's why there is such a case of basa menes. Now this only by basa menes of a basa yavama, but the daughter of a yavama, which is that if the yavam goes and does yibum and they have a daughter, and then he dies. Uvasashni, or the daughter of a secondary erva, or vasarusa, or the daughter of a woman that he's engaged to. Uvasanusa, or the daughter of the woman that he raped, and he subsequently gets married to her, and has a daughter, and then he dies. These cases, these daughters don't get sustenance after the father died with this tnai ksuba, because these are all questions in the Gemara and ksubas that the Gemara doesn't resolve, and since it's a doubt, you cannot collect money from the brothers of the daughter. Now, why these cases of doubt? By Yavamam, because all these are what's called Tanai Ksuba. All these cases, there's no real Ksuba from this man that had the daughter with her. Because by the Yavam, by the actual Ksuba is actually the original husband's Ksuba. So there is not really the Yavam's responsibility. By a Shnia, secondary Erva, she doesn't have a Ksuba because they're forbidden to get married. So therefore, there's no Tanai Ksuba. By an arusa, that since the chum did not really masakin the ksuba until they get married, so maybe she doesn't get the tnai ksuba either. By the woman that he violated, she also doesn't get a ksuba because actually the monies that he has to pay for the penalty for having raped her is actually what's quote unquote the ksuba. So therefore, even if he subsequently gets married and has a daughter, so maybe she doesn't have the tnai ksuba. So regarding all these women, those daughters don't have the tnai ksuba, and the bishop doesn't get fed. Now, b'chayavin, but when the father's still alive, who chayav ben zaynas, and so he has to feed those daughters, kedin sharaban v'aban b'chayavin, they are his children. So just like he has to feed up until age 6 the sons of the daughters, when he's still alive, he would have to. It's just after he passed away that here they don't have the rights to the mezaynas for that, which is coming from the tnai ksuba. Halachat ezvav. Hama'aris basan nezaynas ben achan. If someone gets engaged to a daughter who was getting fed from the state from her brothers, because her father had passed away, So when this chassid gets engaged to that girl, chayvim is in the same mishas erusin. He's obligated to feed her from the moment he gets engaged to her. Although generally the obligation doesn't start then. Here he is. Why? Shari ein la mezaynes ma'achar, because she only gets fed from her brothers. In contrast to her father, who's going to give her until she gets married, here she only gets from her brothers, El Atra Tsaris or Yatra Divger, either until she gets engaged or until she becomes a Begeres. Vizu, in a Begeres. And here she's not a Begeres because she tells an Asma that she can feed herself. El Gitan and Nara, she's either a minor or just barely an adult. And so, therefore, the moment she gets engaged to you, she can't get fed anymore. And she's not old enough to make her own. And the end of the Meritzer is Bazar Risase, and no one wants that his Kala should be disgraced, but here there's something that she has to go knocking on doors collecting for food. So therefore, it's an obligation of the Chasna already, in this case, once he gets engaged, that she loses the money that she was getting up until now, that he has to feed her. Halacha Dazayin. This is a Basu Me'ana. Let's say this daughter, who's getting fed from the state, she gets married as a minor, but then she does me and she leaves. She was a 10-year-old, this is not the right husband, and she just leaves. Oh, in this Garshur, she gets divorced, and this Amna, she gets widowed, that husband died. Even if she's a Shemer Zivim, which means that she has still some type of Zika connection to her brother-in-law, but since she's no more married anymore, so she comes back to her father's household, and she's not yet a Begeris, not yet, let's say, 12 and a half, so her reason is Zinzim, that's the Vias, so she goes back to her original state, and she gets fed from the father's estate, until she becomes a Begeris, or until she becomes engaged a second time. Now, Halachi Zayin, now the Ram goes, regarding, we had mentioned this parak and the previous parak regarding the Tanai Ksuba for the rights for after the husband dies, the father husband, for that people get fed from his estate. So now we talk about, okay, who gets precedence in the father's estate between the sons, the daughters, the widow. So says Rama Lochi Zay, Mishame, so someone dies, Venir Banim Ban, so he leaves over sons and daughters. Yeshua Banim Kalan Chasim. So the sons, as the Torah tells us, they inherit the whole estate. The Hemzon, the Sachi Yisem, and they feed their sisters, which is from the Tanai Ksuba. So like we said, until they become a begaris or until they get engaged. Now, but then remember when we say this, when the father leaves over in the state, that both the sons and daughters could get enough sustenance as at the same time, until the girls get old enough that then they're no more part of the ksubas, the tnai ksuba, and then they'll move on. That's what's called in halacha as a large estate. But if, let's say, the estate does not have that amount, rather less than that, so then the process is going to be different. So we're first going to take off, we're going to open up a new bank account, we're going to take off the amount of food that the daughters need until they become old enough. They're going to give the leftover to the sons. Meaning, it's not enough. I mean, at some point, the sons are obviously going to have to find some other funds, because it's not enough, if we do the calculation, for the sons and daughters to get fed, that it's going to be enough food for the whole family until the daughters reach the age of Bagris. It's not enough. So we first allocate funds for them, and then whatever's left over goes to the sons. Now, the main shav, let's say there's only enough money for the daughters to get fed. That's only how much money, not even enough for the sons at all. If you calculate how much food they're going to need till they become 12 and a half, all those daughters, nothing left for the sons. So that's what's going to happen. The daughter, they get fed from the state until they become 12 and a half or until they get engaged. And the sons, they have to go asking on the doorways, they have to go for handouts, they have to go get their food. Now, the reason for that we do like this is because it's normal for a man to be knocking on doors. It's not normal for a woman to be doing that. It's disgraceful for the woman, and therefore she's not going to be able to do that. So therefore, we require them to do and the girls to get fed. Now, halach yitches. Remember, when do we say this? Benich karka. If what type of estate we're talking about by the father? He has real estate. He has land. That's what we said the previous halacha. Let's say only left over movable items. Since only a ga'in, it's a later post-Talmud institution, that the daughter should still get fed, that should even include mublai, let's say, has a whole store of wares, that of house wares, and that's what he sells. So that the daughters have rights to get their mezainis from a talmud is only a ka'inic institution. So regarding that, so for that, the sons and daughters will have equal rights in that what we call the smaller estate, because we had enough, so then we could just do as we need to. But here they're going to be equal. Because this that the Ge'inim had instituted, that the daughter should be able to collect metalton, was not to make them better than the sons, only to be like the sons. Okay, that's how the Ge'inim ruled, and therefore in that situation, they're going to get equal. We're not going to just give it to the daughters and make the sons go for handouts. Now, halachia test. Let's say Neich Karka. Okay, let's say the father left over real estate. And there was a large estate.
Okay, so that would seem like we said that's the classic situation where the sons inherit and they feed the daughters. But when this matu acher kein, and then subsequently, however, it got diminished, the estate, even if they didn't come yet to court to decide what to do, for zachem ben yershim. So the inheritors already inherited the rights, because at the time of the death, which is the defining moment, it was a large estate. So they feed their sisters until it depletes for the two of them together, even though the daughters are not going to end up having what they need, because at the time of death, there was enough, and then if they inherit, they feed. So the inheritors already got the rights. But let's say, let's say, at the time of death, actually was a small estate. But then increased subsequently. So here also, the sons will inherit. The reason for that is because the sons do have somewhat of inheritance over here, and therefore they always have these rights, and therefore if it did increase, then they go back being the inheritors and feeding their sisters. Now, vafulin is rabu, but even says the Rambam, even if let's say it does not increase, it is nechasim u'atim, which we said that the truth is that we have to first allocate the funds to the daughters, only left the leftovers do the sons get. If the sons go and they beat them to it, and they sell even the small estate, which really we said the daughters should get it, mechakayim, the sale is valid, because ultimately they are the biblical inheritors. And once it's sold, it's nechasim mishabadim, and the daughters have the right to extract money from the nechasim mishabadim. Halacha chav. Hay nechasim merubim. Okay, let's say it was a large estate. But v'yeshlov chayv, let's say there's outstanding debt against the father. Or he stipulated with his wife, at the time they get married, she doesn't have beat that he's going to feed her daughter, meaning not their daughter, her daughter, his stepdaughter, her daughter from a previous marriage. So, however, even though there's outstanding debt, ein chayv v'lo mezaynus bas ishtoi, we don't say that the debt or the sustenance that he has to feed his stepdaughter is diminishing the estate to say, okay, although it's really a large estate, but really, if you consider all the deficits, really it's a small estate, and we have to then give the daughters first, and then only the leftovers, or if there's no leftovers, the sons have to go knock on the doors. No. Eliyusha ban makal, rather we say the sons inherit everything, because technically it is a large estate. And then they pay off the creditors their debts. And then they feed the stepdaughter whatever that was made up by the father until that time. And the sisters get fed until they become begaris, or until they become engaged. And the sons are also going to be able to use it at the same time. Because, again, it was, so to speak, a large estate, as we said in a prior halacha. We don't say as if it's not there. We say it's there, but that's a debt, and that has to be paid up. And then it goes out from those rights, but again, it's still considered as nechasim merubim. Halacha fal, hinich almana. Let's say left over a widow, ubas mimena imishacheres, and a daughter from her or from some other woman. Be that as may, he still has that tonight subit to feed her daughters. But the imen nechasim kedei she's understand. But the estate does not have enough to feed both the widow and her daughter. So halacha is almana nizenis. The widow gets fed. Vabas tishal b'sachem, and now here the daughter has to go knocking on doors, because Stigmar Babasa tells us the honor of his widow, of his dear, of his wife, is greater than the honor, the dignity of his daughters. And says Rambam, in the name of Sotu, I say, Shemezainis Abbas, that the food for the daughter is also, in other words, an equivalency of like the widow getting before the daughter, that the daughter's sustenance are Koyimli Rushas Abben, as Ksubas Imai, Shemez B'chayav. That comes before the inheritance of the sons of their mother's Ksuba when their mother died when the father was still alive, which that's what we were calling all along Ksubas Ben Indichrin. Now, why does the daughter's sustenance come first? As the Rambam explains, although they're both Tanai Ksuba, so who said that their rights is before the son's rights? Because it's a Kavochemer. If we're rejecting the biblical Yerusha, which is that the male sons are biblically have rights to inherit the father's estate, and we reject the Bnei Zayin Sabas because we want the daughters to get fed, which we say that the sons don't get it. They have to allocate the funds to feed the daughters, and only whatever's left over, then they inherit. Or if there's no left over, they have to go knock on doors. So you think the daughter's getting fed is not going to override the inheritance of the ksuba she tonight bezn, which that ksuba's been in nechren is only a rabbinic inheritance from the stipulation of the court. Nimzayin is about for the daughters to get fed. For sure you would. And therefore, if it's between those two, the daughters are going to be fed. Now halacha base, mishamez, if someone dies, let's say he leaves over adult daughters and minor daughters, older and younger, and he didn't leave over any sons, because if there's sons, though he said it goes like we said before, regarding, okay, the son inherits, and then, okay, if you're older, you're not getting anything, but if you're under begaris and not engaged, then you do get. In this situation where they're all girls, some are adults and some are minors, So Einam, we don't say Yizoin HaKetans. Oh, okay, so let the minors get fed. Actually, Yiv Guru until they become a Begeris, or until they get engaged. And then Biachalku, Sharon, the Chazim, B'Shava, then, but you'll divide the rest of the state equally. No, Kulan, Chalkis, B'Shava. In this case, with the old girls, they're all going to divide equally the estate. Because when all the daughters are inheriting the whole estate as one, then the courts did not stipulate a designation of mezainis, because it's only when there's sons and they're inheriting, and then what are the daughters going to do? So when you're money daughter, then you get a sustenance. But if anyways the daughters are inheriting, then we just go ahead and divide equally, and that they just all inherit, and we don't do that the minors are getting fed, and that until they go ahead until they become older.